The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovec. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News. We want to talk a little bit about what's going on when it comes to e-cigarettes in particular. The CDC coming out recently and saying vaping is growing more prevalent among young people in 2021. Check this out. 1 in 9 high school students said they had vaped in the past month. So let's get some thoughts on the health effects of vaping. Dr. Joanna Cohen is director of the Institute for Global Tobacco Control at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, supported by Michael R. Bloomberg, founder of Bloomberg LP and Bloomberg Philanthropies. She joins us on the phone from Baltimore. Dr. Cohen, good to have you here on this Thursday. Let's get to it, because some other research I've seen is that when you tend to do e-cigarettes, you see that in terms of adolescents, they are over 3 times more likely to use cannabis than those who don't. So there's a lot of things to think about when it comes to health impacts. How do you see it? What is the research and the thoughts that you think we should be all thinking about?
Yeah, well, let me start with the bottom line, that really no one should be using e-cigarettes for cigarette smokers who are trying to quit. And unfortunately, there's been a lot of kids, exactly as you say, Carol, have taken up the use of e-cigarettes. They've tried them, they've become addicted. And partly this was because there are a lot of marketing of fun flavors, fruit and unicorn and all kinds of different flavors, and that's appealing to kids. And I think kids also don't really equate these vaping products to cigarettes. They know that cigarettes aren't good for them. They have not been smoking. We've seen smoking rates decline among kids, but it's been, you know, really scary to see this epidemic of vaping among young people. And there are health effects, as you say. It appears that kids who do vape go on to their unhealthy behaviors. We want to keep these products out of the hands of kids.
You know, Jen, I wanted to go back to that idea you just said about how if you're trying to quit actual smoking cigarettes, that vaping is not the best route. Because I remember years ago, and maybe it was just a marketing thing, but that seemed to be sort of the appeal of vaping, that it wasn't as dangerous as cigarette smoking and a good way to sort of wean yourself off of that. Has the research sort of debunked that notion completely?
Yeah, that's a good question, Mike. And it is hard to quit smoking, but it's the most, you know, important thing you can do for your health. And so nothing is going to be as harmful as cigarettes. The research is still nascent to whether, you know, how helpful e-cigarettes are. There are randomized trials. We see that in certain conditions, they might improve smokers' chances of quitting. So I think that at this point, if you're a cigarette smoker, you've tried other FDA-approved methods for quitting, whether it's nicotine replacement therapy or some various drugs, and they have not worked. E-cigarettes might work for you, and it's worth a try. It's not going to be as harmful as your cigarettes, but you won't switch completely. You want to get off cigarettes and move e-cigarettes and then eventually quit the e-cigarettes.
All right, so the FDA ban on Juul's vaping products off the market in the United States. Is it having an impact?
Good question. So actually, there's an administrative stay on the FDA ban on Juul. This is, you know, it's the FDA is re-reviewing the materials that Juul submitted to make a determination of whether these products can stay on the market or not. But the FDA is reviewing marketing applications for actually millions of e-cigarettes and liquids. They've made determinations on a number of them, and we are going to be seeing it contracting. We're not going to be seeing as many brands on the market, fewer flavors as well, but that's still in progress. So with Juul, you know, that's certainly a big one. Products are still on the market at this time during the administrative stay on the ruling.
And is there? Do you think there's any path for Juul to bring these products back to market? You know, I'm assuming they're fighting in court and everything. Is there a concern that they'll, you know, some court might sort of put them back in business?
Well, it depends. I think, you know, there were a lot of hypothetically great things about Juul, and potentially the hope is that they can deliver the nicotine in a way that cigarette smokers find appealing, so that they can switch completely to cigarettes and get off their cigarettes. There's that hope.
No, please finish. Forgive me.
No. So I think, you know, what Juul has to do is show that their products are, you know, going to benefit the public health, that they're not going to attract kids to use, and that they are, you know, not going to create additional harms for cigarette smokers. There were some concerns in the in their application that potentially there were some toxicological concerns with the application. But there, you know, potentially Juul can get over those, and if they are ethical and not marketing to kids, and focusing on the market that could potentially truly benefit from their products, I think there's a possibility that they can do good.
All right, we're going to leave it on that note. Dr. Joanna Cohen, thank you so much. Director of the Institute for Global Tobacco Control at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, of course, supported by Michael R. Bloomberg, founder of Bloomberg LP and Bloomberg Philanthropy. She was joining us on the phone from Baltimore. Keep in mind, Juul just created, you know, roughly a decade or so ago, so not such a long time ago, I think even under a decade.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting to see kind of the rise and fall of something like this.
Absolutely. And I think, Carol, we can all agree there's nothing as nasty as actually chewing tobacco.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
One of the stories that is certainly getting a lot of attention on the Bloomberg is today's Bloomberg Big Take. It's a must read as determined by our editorial team here at Bloomberg. It's about how renters across cities and income brackets are really struggling to find new homes or pay for the ones that they already live in. Let's get more with Bloomberg News U.S. economy reporter Maria Paula Mijares Torres. She is with us in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker studio. You would think, as I said to you, my million years of Spanish would make me better with pronunciations, but we're so glad to have you here with us.
Thank you.
Maria, talk to us about this story, because I do think when it comes to inflation prints, we're watching the different components of the inflationary pressures. Some are coming down. When it comes to shelter, not so much.
Yeah. As we saw yesterday in the CPI report, rent and shelter was the number that was hiking up the most. And in this story, we just got to show the stories behind that. So in a lot of cities in the U.S., not only the ones we know, you know, New York and California, but in many other places, here we talk Las Vegas, Atlanta, Phoenix, Miami, Tucson, places where rent usually wasn't as expensive. Now it's very expensive that not even locals can afford it. And they're fearing eviction and facing a lot of challenges, you know, with how essential living is.
How much have they gone up? A lot.
Yes. It's the first time that in a while that the median rent is $2,000, and we saw how it was a huge hike for the typical American. It was,
well, we talk about, right, like we're talking about energy prices, we're talking about food prices, but when we think about it, right, I think about it when I'm making my mortgage payment, like it's a big chunk of change. And if you're renting, the same thing, that rental prices, because so many Americans cannot afford to actually buy homes, those rental prices have gone up. But overall, shelter is such a big part of what every American pays on a regular basis.
Yeah, and that's exactly why we wanted to focus this story on rents, because the housing market is very, it's a very hot topic right now because mm-hmm. it's a hard market, but not a lot has been done on rents either, and they're suffering a lot. Renters are suffering a lot.
Yeah, I think shelter is something like a third of CPI. So even if you're not worried about making rent, if you're a market person worried about inflation, it's just the most important thing in inflation. But Maria, I'm wondering, you know, we tend to focus on the inflation problem in the U.S. a lot. Politically, it's just a big hot topic. But really, inflation is a global problem. And I'm wondering, is this problem with rising rents, is that also a global problem? And is the U.S. sort of in the same boat as the rest of the world? Or is it worse here? You know, how's this situation globally?
Yeah, well, other countries are also struggling a lot with rent. I know in Australia, and we did a Stephanomic episode on this article that came out 2 weeks ago, and we were talking also on other global issues. But here we got to focus mostly in the U.S. because we saw in a Census Bureau survey that it was the biggest number in a while. 8.5 million Americans were unable to pay their monthly rent in wow. June and July. So that's the biggest number we've seen in a long time, and it's a concerning issue here in the States, especially because a lot of people moved to, you know, cities that have more calorous climates during the pandemic, and headquarters moved, and that caused places like Atlanta and Miami to get higher demand of rents, and the locals now cannot afford it.
Well, that's what I wonder. I know just from my own family, anecdotally, I've had a lot of members move down south because they can do flex working. Their employers don't care where the heck they are living, and they're looking for places where there's lower taxes, maybe warmer climates. How has that also led to some of these imbalances and higher rental prices?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons the demand has increased and the prices have increased, but also this is the first time since the pandemic that a lot of renters are left without the moratoria that allow them to, you know, be more flexible when they didn't mm-hmm. receive the same amount of income during the pandemic. So it's the sum of a lot of things. It's the end of the moratoria terms, is the inflation that we're seeing, is the high demand for people moving south. So everything all at once, like Kay Reynolds said in the article we quote her, is a perfect storm for renters right now.
Yeah.
You know, Maria, I was reading this story and I was thinking back to years ago in New York. There was a guy who tried to start a political party. Carol, you might remember it. It was called the Rent is Too Damn High Party. They didn't get very far with that political party, but it does make me think.
That's a good point, though.
You know, is there any signs of a political backlash about this? Is there any sort of pressure being put on the politicians to solve this issue?
I would love to hear that. I would love to see if there's another meme that comes out of this issue. When we took out the podcast 2 weeks ago, that was one of the editors tweeted out that the rent is too damn high. But it would be definitely an issue to watch in these new midterm elections if that makes any kind of impact. But so far, what we've seen most is people advocating for it and other issues like how these rent, people cannot afford the rent, the demand is increasing, people are constructing new condos that, you know, don't need to be built, but they're only being built because they're targeting the new audiences moving in that need like fancier apartments. So that's the movements I would say is more social than political.
All right. Well, our on-air whisperer, Ariel Agami, our producer of our YouTube show, said it was Jimmy McMillan who went out there and said rent
Jimmy McMillan, that's right. How could I forget that name?
I don't know, but all right, man. He just like clues us in. Maria, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. The Bloomberg Big Take. Check it out on the Bloomberg.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, it is time to drive towards the close. It is Thursday, August 11th, and we've just got about 10 and a half minutes left in today's trading session. Charlie breaking down those numbers. The equity side of things, we are just coming off our lows of this session, but we're seeing it across the board. Little changes, though, on the S&P and Dow, really the NASDAQ, the underperformer. So let's get to it with Axel Merk, President and Chief Investment Officer at the investment advisory firm Merk Investments. He joins us on the phone from San Francisco. Axel, so great to be talking with you. It's been a while. You do focus on macro trends. What are the top macro trends that you are focusing on in today's environment? When I feel like there's a lot of them, but there's a couple of really big ones.
Yeah, I think cat herding is a technical name for this.
I like
focus
that.
On these days. We have all these teenagers that call the market and also teenagers the Fed. I mean, what we have is we've had high inflation. And I think what everybody's trying to do is they try to put this into the linear model saying, oh, if we just hike rates enough, oh, if we just do this. What I think people have to realize is that once inflation is high, we have created unstable dynamics. And so, and that's why everybody is so confused. That's why the market goes up one day, then goes down one day. And every day we change the tune of what it's all about. And now we think, oh my God, the inflation is lower, so everything is going to be fine. Well, it will be fine for a few weeks, maybe a few months. And then guess what? Another inflation print is going to be high. And so that's the sort of, and if you ask me the big trends I'm watching, well, I'm obviously watching the economic development. I'm watching what inflation is going to do, but also I'm watching human nature. We've had folks like Bernanke write editorials that we are so much smarter than the 1970s. Yes, we are, but it's human nature. And so when inflation comes down a little bit, okay, you take the sledgehammer away a little bit, right? But it's, we have this unstable dynamic, and I think that's what we really have to just accept and try to muddle through.
You know, Axel, one word that's obviously being thrown around a lot in this environment is stagflation. And I know your firm launched a stagflation ETF, the Merck Stagflation ETF, the ticker STGF. Talk to us about that strategy. How does that ETF specifically sort of invest in a stagflationary environment? And how, in general, should investors think about investing when there's stagflation like we're seeing?
We looked at what happens when inflation expectations move higher. And obviously, we only have the 1970s. Economy is kind of a little different. But stocks on a real basis didn't perform so well. Ideally, you want to invest in the CPI, but you can't do that directly. So what we invest in, we have a heavy weighting in tips, and then we invest in oil, gold, and real estate, and have a trend-following methodology in oil, gold, and real estate, because that sort of trend following methodology worked well in stagflationary environments. And net, what you want to do, you want to have something, and at least the way that we designed it, that is a substitute to potential bond allocation, has that sort of volatility, but has the opportunity that in a stagflation environment gives you an extra kicker, whereas in a normal environment behaves more like a bond might. And so we're trying to bridge that. And I think this is the first, or I know it's the first stagflation themed ETF in the market. It's a tool for the toolbox of investors. I'm not going to replace everything else, but we believe it's a diversifier that people want to look at.
Axel, when it comes to macro, and I know I asked about that initially, what key things might you be focusing on? Is it possible, should we concede at some point, that we can actually have persistently higher inflation, maybe not 8-9%, that's manageable. Maybe we need to rethink that it needs to be 3-4%, but that we can do it still with jobs growth and ultimately some economic growth. Do we need to kind of rethink our economic model, perhaps, especially as we see a turn back on globalization? Mike and I were just talking about nearshoring or, you know, more manufacturing coming home, certainly here in the United States. Do we need to rethink our metrics that describe kind of an okay and stable economy?
Well, first of all, even when Volcker got inflation under control, we didn't go right back down to 2% and lived happily ever after. And so we have to keep in mind that this is going to be a process. The challenge is really is whether the Fed is going to lose focus too much. In the 70s, we had the stop-and-go economics. The Fed said, no, they're not going to do this, meaning that the moment that the economy slowed down, they stopped and so forth. And that's why I mentioned the human factor is so important. The theory is one thing. But, yes, what are you going to be satisfied with? By all means, we have lots of tailwinds have turned into headwinds, be it globalization to move from just-in-time production, just-in-case production. The Ukrainian war is, I believe, a symptom of less stability globally. Everybody's going to invest more in military defense, and that means budget deficits going to continue to be high. A lot of the benefits we had from globalization are in reverse as when it comes to inflation anyway. And so, yes, and it's going to be higher, but the Federal Reserve obviously has a job to do, and the question is whether they'll do it or not. At this stage, the only thing that the Powell Fed has admitted is that the models have been wrong. I think it was Larry Summers who said we need a new approach. They need to throw out this backward-looking methodology they introduced and all kinds of other things, and we may need a new Fed chair for that, and that's not on the horizon. So I don't think we're going to get to something that's going to be more stable in the long run for quite a while.
Axel, I'm curious what you think about this legislation in Washington, the Inflation Reduction Act. It obviously focuses a lot on green energy. What are some of the market implications for this bill, in your opinion?
Well, yesterday's low inflation print was clear proof that the Inflation Reduction Act had a full impact already. and I'm saying that cynically, of course, right? I mean, they come up with these fancy names. Obviously, there is no direct impact on inflation. Many of the impact is more longer run, but it has a nice name. When it comes to green technology, the one thing I would like to just point out is everybody wants to turn green, and nobody knows where all these minerals come from that you need for batteries and whatnot. And so on that end, anyway, I'm not suggesting the overall CPI is going to be high for that matter, but turning everything green is going to be expensive. Now, obviously, the cost of some stuff is coming down, but ultimately, it's a political thing to call it
right.
Inflation Reduction Act. The actual implication is obviously we're not doling out checks as much anymore as we used to. They do it in other parts of the world. The Germans want to give yet another stimulus. When you give a check, but supply is constrained,
right.
Then you have a problem. And that's really why stagflation lasts for a while, because the politically right thing to do is the economically wrong thing to do.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Got to run. Great to hear from you again. Axel Merk, he's President and Chief Investment Officer over at Merk Investments, joining us on the phone from San Francisco.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.